next law. Comments. We'll go back to 13 for the sake of those who have issues. We're done with law 13 in terms of public comments and departments. Proceeding to law 14.
Clause 14, there is ARASA. It strongly supports Chapter 5 of the bill. However, it believes that it could be strengthened in respect of the following three areas. The establishment of halfway houses, types of outpatient services, and support groups. In particular, it submits that Chapter 5 could be strengthened by including all the educational components of the harm reduction services based on the evidence of the effectiveness of these interventions and the constitutional obligations to provide them. Thus, it submits that the language of Chapter 5 of the bill should more clearly define the program for drug users who relapse and continue their substance use. In the result, it recommends that Clause 14, subclause 3E, redrafted as follows. The dissemination of information to the community and services users about the dangers of substance abuse, including the links between substance abuse, HIV, infection, and viral hepatitis, the prevention of HIV infection and viral hepatitis, and overdose prevention and response. Central Drug Authority, Clause 14, Subclause 3, F should be added. We should read, the dissemination of information to the community about the Central Drug Authority and the National Drug Master Plan. Clause 14, Subclause 3C should be amended to read, AIDS and other social pathologies. That's all, Chair.
All right, and from the government department? All right. Okay, that was comments on clause 14. Department, do you want to react to what ARASA and CDA are saying on clause 14?
Sure. On 14. The one dealing with the dissemination of information about the CDA and the National Drug Master Plan, I do not think really quite belongs here. But it's about communicating what the CDA is doing. I mean, it's something that I think the CDA should on its own be able to do without us having to set it in. Because this deals with the establishment of a public halfway house.
I actually find it strange because the CDA is asking us to write into the law a strategy, a campaign about themselves, say legal duty. I thought they would rather be asking us to campaign about the harms of associated with substance abuse. Strange that they want the whole campaign to be about themselves. But all right, in terms of, we're still on the floor?
On the comment around other illnesses or diseases, I think this matter was discussed previously and indicated that we didn't have to include more illnesses or diseases to indicate the link between substance abuse and those diseases. I think we agreed on this matter.
Chair, I'm not sure about that. Maybe it was on the date and I was okay. But I would recommend that we expand on the proposal by the CDA on 14.3 to say I think it's a continuation of what's contained there. And other social pathologies. I'm just wondering if we're to list all the diseases, because what is proposed by SMART is not exhaustive in terms of, you know, the conditions that can be linked to substance abuse. That is definitely not, that list is not exhaustive. So I'm just suggesting that maybe in terms of, we could look at the initial dissemination of information to the community and users, service users, about the dangers of substance abuse and the link between substance abuse, maybe HIV and AIDS are worth mentioning, and other social and health pathologies. For me, that would be, they would cover. Otherwise, if we were to list it, there are also some psychiatric conditions that are related to HIV. I mean, that are related to substance abuse. It's a host of other diabetes, whatever. Those people are more, you know, substance abusers are more prone to get those kinds of health conditions. So,
yeah. All right. Members, do you want to comment on this? I think Mr. Vivius, you also wanted to add something, right? Oh, all right. All right. Anybody else from amongst the members who wants to raise any issues or comment on the issues that are raised? If we are able to mention AIDS specifically, what prevents us from mentioning the other prevalent diseases that are known to be transmitted? I mean, apart from AIDS, hepatitis, viral hepatitis, and what's the other one mentioned in the list of diseases from the other organization? Which organization was it?
ARASA.
If we are able to mention AIDS, for example, and if we know that the other diseases are equally problematic in terms of the rate of prevalence or transmission, is there a particular reason why what harm would there be in mentioning them here and elsewhere in the bill? Because a question could be asked, why even mention AIDS then, as opposed to any other disease? Wouldn't the actual mention of other diseases than AIDS actually show that, in fact, the problem is not just an AIDS problem, it's bigger than AIDS, and actually open the matter up rather than close?
Chair, I'm certainly not the expert on this, but you know, in the bill it talks about HIV and AIDS, so the links between substance use, HIV and AIDS. Then there's a suggestion from CDA about other social pathologies, and I just think it's because if you think of what the smart lady said earlier about the prevalence of sexual activity when you've been taking certain types of substances, that's probably that's why HIV is specifically mentioned from that point of view. I don't know, I'm not quite sure, but maybe it's a Parkinson's or something.
Honorable Mokopane Zulu, the opportunity.
I was just saying, it's not like with HIV, the department have too much choice on the matter, because it's a policy decision, and it has the link between HIV and substances in the country's national strategic plan. So how you respond to it, it needs to be very clear in your legislation, because you are required to do it.
No, I think that point is made. So are we saying that, can I hear you, Ms. Weber?
result was profound ecstasis. Profound ecstasis is also very much linked to drug abuse. Profound ecstasis is also spent by the use of needles and that sort of thing. And also sputum and all that sort of thing. So I think actually not even viral ecstasis. I mean, hepatitis is sufficient. I don't know why they have to put out viral ecstasis. But if they put out hepatitis, I think that should be included. I think HIV infection and hepatitis should be in, to my knowledge.
But I'm understanding that the problem with hepatitis is that this particular area is especially fueling its spread, and that motivates the viruses get concealed in the pipes that get smoked and in all the gadgets that get used, and it just gets passed on and on and on. So what harm would there be? Because in any case, it can only aid the fight against AIDS as well. I mean, I don't see how its mention would downgrade or in any way minimize the struggle against AIDS. Yeah. Look, I think that the idea really is to highlight those which we know are the most difficult and the most problematic. And we can make it clear that without limiting it, all right, whatever the legal language. As the chief director, the office has already said, there was already an agreement to go that direction anyway. All right, so that seems to be the way we will go. The formulation will just be another matter. Honorable Bokopanibula? Now, what we've decided is that we're going to continue with 14 in your absence, but that once we are done with 14, we'll go back to 11 to accommodate the additional issues that you wanted to raise over and above the what you called. All right. So let's first make sure that we are satisfied that we are done with clause 14 before we go back to 11. Any further comments on clause 14 before we go back? All right, here is a question.
Sabina, clause 14, Chair, Ibuaka establishment. Maragoka discussed earlier about the hepatitis B. So, can you say it again?
All right. Anybody who can aptly explain the rationale behind the inclusion of diseases or specific mention of diseases in clause 14? Ms. Weber, you want to kick that?
Chair, I think that AIDS and other social pathologies is making it very broad. If we are going to do it, then I would say AIDS and other viral infections.
We could say AIDS, hepatitis B, and other viral.
Yeah. What's your question?
She's asking why we are even referring to diseases in the first place, clause 14, what necessitates it. So I'm saying, does anybody amongst the experts want to venture a response to that question?
Sure.
The Chief Director of Legal Services, you want to venture? And then the Chief Director?
Sure, but
listen to your answer. All right?
Sure, I'm not venturing response as an expert. I'm just trying to read what...
Can venture is just a draft.
Clause 14.3 basically says the manager of a halfway house must provide information relating to the following programs, and it is about the communication of certain elements and education programs. That is how HIV and AIDS came to be included in this clause.
Yeah. So the underlying objective of that clause or sub-clause deals with communication about the dangers of substance abuse and the transmission of communicable diseases. All right? All right?
What can
I'm confused.
I was speaking with one of the other people before.
Yeah.
So I switched to off-air with one of them. Let me come back to English. I'm just saying, you know, for me, what I'm struggling with, and I've said this very consistently, is that we talk, the heading says establishment of halfway houses. Public. Establishment of public halfway houses.
All right.
Now I thought that we discussed the issue. That's why I came back. Okay, that's why I want us to go back. I'm struggling.
No, that's
why I want us to go back, because I know that this morning I had a terrible morning. I've been evicted from my office. I found all my stuff in the corridor, and that took me from.
Oh, sorry about that.
So I'm officeless as I'm sitting here, and it kind of
destabilized
me a bit. That's why I was late. That was one of the main reasons. But what I'm struggling with, and I mean, we said this very consistently, the first thing is that you can't have, and you've made this point as well, that we need to try and find a way of ensuring that the heading talks to, we're establishing halfway houses. But in the middle of the establishing of halfway houses, we're also talking about programs and diseases and everything else. Firstly, we need to fix that. So that we talk about establishing, that's the one problem that I have, that we outline what is required, because we have a section on programs. And I said this at the beginning, I said, Chair, to help us go forward and pass a legislation that everybody can pick up and use, is that we have a section, and I thought that we agreed. It will have a section that outlines, and I can say you deal with registration, because I said that this section 2, going down, belongs, it's conditions of registration, where before you get a certificate, you need to comply with certain things, right? Why don't we have that outlined as conditions of registration? Then we know whether it's a private or a public. You need to satisfy these criteria so that you're able to get your license or certificate or whatever we want to call it, right? And then we have a section where we're talking about processes to register the program or the services or whatever they are. And then we outline, we said that the minister will set, you know, like a framework that will say that where now as an official that is in the department, these are some of the things that are the conditions for you to say that program is in line. And then we said that program will blah, blah, do this, respect human rights, wala, without taking away the uniqueness of the program.
Can I explain
now,
something before you proceed in response to what you've just said?
Okay.
Just to clarify something. We are running three processes at the same time, and also positively responding to a suggestion you made earlier before we adjourned. And that is the fact that ordinarily what we would have done is to run through the public hearings, clause by clause, finish, come back, run through the input from the department, clause by clause, finish, come back, having appraised ourselves of what the public and everybody else is saying, and having applied our minds to the issues, go through the third phase, which is to ourselves run through the bill clause by clause, and then look at how do we restructure the bill. All right? We agreed with your very progressive proposal that we're going to do all three simultaneously. All right? So we've done the first phase of going through what the public are saying on clause 14, what the departments are saying on clause 14. Now that we are done with that, all right, we that you're making now should come through as our formulation of instruction to the department in terms of what we want them then to do in relation to Clause 14. So we're going to specifically under each clause. So you must now say to the department, in the light of the approach that we adopted previously, we are proposing that in relation to Clause 14, this is the way that they must reform it. So you can continue with that approach.
Okay. One, we agreed that we are not going to have separate rules for private and public, except acknowledge certain things that might not apply. So the 14 and the 15 with this private and public stories, if my memory serves me well, that means the department will take good care of that.
Are going to be collated into a set of conditions for registration.
Yeah, that should be done. The second thing is that two, going further down, it's a program. So we need to decide. I'm not happy where it is, because we need to be able, because these are centers, and some of them is not like a school. So we need to just clean up so that some of these things mentioned on two are conditions of registration. They need to be moved to conditions. That means if you don't satisfy this particular thing, it means that you get and this point leads me to 13 chair to say that maybe we should separate, because before we went for lunch we were talking about the duration here of 5 years, but I feel that we need to have two different types of registration, because you will need a conditional registration. That would have to be a shorter period, because I can, from where I'm sitting, when we pass this bill, a lot of the centers that are out there that have been governing themselves are not going to comply with some of the things. So we need to, there where we talk about the registration, have a conditional registration, so that we separate. But if you have a conditional registration, you know, how long? And then if you are establishing one, this is what the conditions of registration. And if you already have one that you are running, what is the transitional measure that we are putting in place? So those three things must be very distinct and different. And also we must be very clear in terms of the registration check of programs and the registrations of services and the registrations of the centers. Because these are, for me, three different things. You can have a program without having a center where you run it in the community, an outpatient facility. We have this discussion. So two, and the rest of it is very long to say. So when the collapsing happens of 14 and 15, some of the elements must go out.
Right. I think at the end of each chapter, we're going to have to look at the chapter as a whole and ask ourselves, what are the core elements that constitute this chapter? Right. And ask the question, how best can this be organized? Already it's clear that we're going to have to collapse the conditionalities and the norms and standards, irrespective of whether it's a public or private facility. All right, that seems to be emerging quite strongly. And therefore, the differentiation between the two types should not relate to which norms and standards apply. It can only relate to issues of governance, ownership, funding, the organizational issue. Right. That's the only place for distinction. Yes.
I'm just reading the content. What are we
because what I'm reading is not what I had in mind.
I would imagine that there's the definition for it, is there not?
Is there a definition for it?
There should be. I'd be surprised if there isn't.
Because
I thought there was.
Is there?
Yes, there should be.
I'm confused.
Yeah, please. They are my part because I have my braille. But
halfway house means a public or private halfway house established in terms of section 14 or registered in terms of section 15.
Does section 14 tell us what a halfway house is? Just wait a minute. Does 14 tell us what a halfway house is?
14, no. The one we are dealing with is about.
I'm asking the department. Yes?
Those 14 basically makes provision for the establishment of a public halfway house and 15 of the registration of a private halfway
does
house.
Does 14 say what a public halfway house is?
No, it doesn't, Chair, but I thought we agreed right from the beginning that we need to look at the definition
of the
and define
right.
them in such a way
yeah.
that.
That's what I thought we agreed to when it came to concepts used in the. We've agreed generally that I think it's more a question of emphasis. Each point, when we get to a point where this needs to be reiterated, I think it's appropriate to reiterate. But yes, we agreed in principle already that the definitions contained in this bill are not sufficient, and some of those definitions are not really definitions. But yes, Honorable Mokopane Zulu.
The halfway house, in my understanding, it's like an because we've got halfway houses that we at the moment we're proposing the establishment of halfway houses for children, like a bridging. Like for now, we've got a gap where, you know, with the 18-year-old. Before they self-established, when they are in homes, in, you know, they fall off, and we're saying we need something in between. So I'm trying to say to myself, if that is the understanding of a halfway house in terms of a bridge, a bridge between when a person, because when I read what 14 says, I think that was the intention. When a person comes out of a treatment center and is not and they are facilitating reintegration into the community, that they would then place the person there. But what makes it a little difficult, and what I'm struggling with, that I think as the department should, is that we need to make sure that this halfway house, in the instance of substance abuse, is in line with, and it complements. So it's not just this bridging, because you are introducing community services. And obviously in a country like South Africa, that will be your best bet. So we all agreed that. And then you've got outpatient services, and then you've got inpatient services. Now we say that you can establish a halfway house. When I read 14 as it stands now, I don't think, because it says somebody must stay there for 12 months. That's a whole year. A whole year in a halfway house. That can't be correct. And it may be extended for 6 months. There is, because with halfway houses, 1 year, especially for substance abuse, is very long. And if you look at the list of the requirements in a halfway house, that the manager of the halfway house must make sure this person has not done this or this person has not done that. Also very long. What do you call it? It's cumbersome for a halfway house. That's the one thing. But if the concept of halfway house chair, the notion is also, you know, when people get released, you find in, I don't know if South Africa has that. In a lot of European countries, I think even in the US, when you get released from prison, and you're not ready to go back home and stuff, they also have like halfway houses. And it's usually short, So we need to firstly agree on how long somebody could build a halfway house. What is the purpose of that halfway house? Is the halfway house in this case intended to complement the family reunification program? Because as it stands now, it's like another treatment center. And everything that falls under this establishment, it's like we're now establishing a bridging treatment center. And you have, treatment chair, you've got treatment programs that last up to 8 weeks. But then you have somebody staying in a halfway house for 12 months. There is a bit of a problem that we need to collectively decide on this concept. What is it that we want? What purpose is it serving? How does it complement outpatient, community-based, and the treatment programs that are generally run in South Africa? And how does it complement the family unification program? And as it stands right now, it's not doing any of the things I outlined.
Looks like D would probably stand out as one of the critical elements, namely skills development for service users and their reintegration into society. But I think that we need to review that list in sub 3. Because you take, for example, paragraph A of sub 3, which talks about relapse prevention in respect of substance abuse. That is very direct in relation to a halfway house. B says the dissemination of information to the community about the dangers of substance abuse. Aren't we in the realm of prevention? Aren't we more focusing on prevention programs? Nothing stops, of course, a halfway house from providing prevention programs if it's registered to provide same. But aren't we overloading the concept of the halfway house with things that belong elsewhere in the whole broad scheme of things? Why do we want this to be a responsibility, a legislated responsibility of the halfway house, paragraph B? The education, C, the education of and the dissemination of information to children, families, and community about the dangers of substance abuse. No reference to families or children of users or of service users who have just undergone treatment and who are in that halfway house. It's simply broad. So we clearly are addressing ourselves to programs that actually belong to prevention in paragraph B and C. Because there's no reference to service users there. D, skills development for service users. There is nothing to use for service users. You know, the implication of using different language in respect of similar matters in law as a rule of interpretation. That tended to mean different things. So we cannot assume that in B and C, you're confining yourself to the inmate of a house, halfway house. You see, especially if D is expressed in that it's confining yourself to them. All right? I assume the word service users in D refers to service users in that halfway house for that matter, as opposed to service users elsewhere. But let's assume that. What about B and C? Seem to be completely open-ended. Aren't we actually talking about programs, prevention programs then? That whole area? And then E, the dissemination of information to the community and service users about the dangers of substance abuse, including links between substance abuse, HIV and AIDS. I would imagine that you want to prepare the community that the person is going back to, but is it primarily by way of educating them about the dangers of substance abuse, or is it primarily about how to deal I really don't understand. It seems as if we're mixing up concepts. We want to do things everywhere when we've created specific arrangements for them to be dealt with specifically elsewhere. Mr. Kalamu, do you want to respond? Oh, yes, all right.
I don't know if I'm confusing issues. Having been in Nikro at the railway, the then railway post, with 20 days, and as inmates are released, we keep them there and engage them in programs. And at the same time, liaise with their families. So that when the reintegration begins, both sides are prepared. I see a halfway house as a safety valve. I don't know if I'm confusing it with, I mean, some of the children too who are released.
That is at the heart of the point we're making.
Yes.
We are saying that precisely the point you're making. It's clearly it's tied. The person who is undergoing rehabilitation or has just been released and the preparation for the reintegration of that person back into their family and their community. It can't be a general process of teaching the community about the dangers of substance abuse. That is a prevention program that applies in another context. So we're saying that this clause should be talking to exactly what you're talking about. And nothing
in addition I'd like
all right, to say. Alright.
In addition I'd like to say I grew up in a colored area and I go there quite often. And there are families there I know who are permanently trapped. And one of them has received this treatment. It is an exercise in futility to take that person back to a situation where he or she was just like that. That is another problem that arises for a rehabilitative substance abuse. The environment at home may be.
You need to treat an entire community and not just an individual. But that is a concept in its own right, and I think it can be dealt with specifically. I don't think that to simply talk about general educating of the public speaks directly to that issue. What speaks directly to that issue is the need to identify communities of families in those situations and to target them specifically. But all right, the department has been dying to respond. First I had Mr. Kalayamu Dimu and then I'll have others. All right?
I agree with the previous speaker on this issue. To say halfway houses many revisions that the same name ran up out of my mind.
Can say you can say mistress.
No. Honorable Director, I'm sorry for getting your same name, but I'm back on track. The halfway houses, their main focus is to ensure reintegration of people who are from treatment centers, to ensure their reintegration into the community. But the process of informing, giving them information or educating them, you cannot stop that. The prevention cannot be stopped. Prevention has got a various level. It goes down as a percentage towards being discharged from the treatment center. It will be done on a minimal level to help this, to sustain this person. But we cannot. Say you are going to stop it. It will be continuous. Even after this has close, except that we need to do away with under 13.4c, we can maybe do away with the
13 or 14.
14.3c, we can do away with the commitment and remain with the children and families. This is my opinion.
Generally or specifically those families of the service user.
Families of the service user.
All right, first let's hear Ms. Keller.
Chair, I think we need to retain and then look at the issue of education of and dissemination of information to children, families, and communities of service users about the dangers of substance abuse. I would agree with it because there you actually, as Mewing has correctly indicated, you'll excuse me, Honorable Member Direnko, it's a continuous process that involves the children of that family, the family of that family, of that individual, and the environment in which that comes, that individual comes from, so that it is prevention, yes, but prevention in a way that will ensure that this person comes home to a better life, you know, to a better environment. So it's appropriately placed where it is, Chairperson. But in terms of, I think maybe C, perhaps how we can phrase it here is that halfway houses also need to do outreach programs. So you cannot just focus on the individuals that are within the facility itself. You've got to look at the extension of that service to people that are in that particular community around outreach programs to communities that are around that area. But as was correctly indicated, perhaps you need to rearrange so that we are able to look at issues around establishing or other programs, services, and so on, programs and services and what have you. So maybe we need to tweak that and clean it up and conditions for registration and all that. But I think maybe we need to, as I said, redraft B to just say that dissemination, outreach programs that provide for dissemination of information to communities, adjacent communities about the dangers of substance abuse.
Yeah, trust me. Who volunteers to translate after Honorable Bokhapane?
No, I'm switched to English.
All right.
Oh, I've got a
few other. All right. Proceed.
Around the globe seems not to yield the result of me getting a flight on Friday or Saturday. It's not working. Flights are full. So, but I've got this problem. Yeah, what are you?
And there's no way we can hijack your international commitment for the sake of
yes, that's the problem.
National crisis.
I thought I would leave on Saturday, but I'm not winning. The flights are fully booked.
All I can say is that we're going to miss your input. We'll probably pass this bill in your absence, and when you come back, you'll find we've made a thorough mess of it. Blame your international commitment for it.
Litigation after litigation. Yes, because we constantly establishing things that was not thought through.
the government must establish treatment centers. Now we think government must also establish halfway houses. And now government must also establish community centers. And government must also establish outpatients. And this is welfare. Yes. Now, all I'm trying to say is that I'm sitting here as a legislator. And I'm looking at this government. And I'm sitting here and I'm listening to, oh, no. Kind of says, yes, that it must be outreach programs, and so we end. But the truth and the honest.
You know, it's as if you were listening to me when I was talking to the minister immediately before the debate this afternoon. I was saying to him, Minister, it seems like you're going to establish a whole lot of things in the
future. Yes, no,
we have the budget for all of
them. I'm being honest because this bugs me. And a piece of me says, I'm happy that I'm not going to be here when this bill is passed because then my name is not going to be there. And I can stand back and say, I did not pass.
Leave you me, your name is on the children's door. Everywhere.
Well, with
back
children,
to back.
No, with children.
All painted there.
Yeah, with children I'll fight with
and
the
it will
dress.
Be painted exactly like that on the
definitely not.
Back
but
and front.
All I'm saying is that let us
as the pro, as a Bokgopane Zulu product.
It's not going to be.
You have your whip protecting
you. All I'm trying to say is that let us, let's just leave this halfway house story a minute here. Let us get back from the department some of the instructions we gave them about the community so that we get clarity. And then we look at where we are. And we honestly, in all fairness to this government, in all of the problems that we have, because one is we pass this thing, Madam Geller, you are going to give it to the public. Come hell, and these two beautiful ladies in front of me are going to make sure of it. Now, I'm saying we establishing this, we're adding. This is services to the government. And I know that when we present this piece of legislation to caucus, Chair, especially you, Trevor will be standing here. And you know that the speaker said we're not passing legislation that's not been costed. So I'm already costing this legislation as I make input to it. And I'm seeing half of these things that we are putting into this legislation is never going to happen. Not on a rainy day, not on a sunny day. It's not going to happen. Not now. We just have too many problems. And we need to be honest, and I'm pleading here with all my heart. Yes. Older people still don't have shelters, Madam Geller. They still don't have the homes we promised them in the older person's bill. They still don't have half of the things that are promised in the older person's bill. And those things are not going to be provided. So all I'm asking...
The youth care centers,
yes,
bill
and the ECG centers and everything that goes there. All I'm asking is that whatever the concept, they sound very nice, they sound very beautiful, they are nice to have. This legislation is too ambitious. This legislation as it stands now has too many things. Let us look at what is doable so that we become responsible legislators. We don't go on and be real politicians that promise people heaven and earth, a train with no rail, an aeroplane with no pilot. Because that is exactly what we are doing. We don't have the capacity. Some of these concepts are very nice to have.
This is a package that was tabled before cabinet.
Yes, I've heard that before, Chair. But let me just conclude, then you can come in.
All right.
What you are trying to tell me, I've heard all of that. I'm just being an optimist, a real South African who wants to be honest to the public of South Africa and promise them something that I know in the near future will be able to achieve. So my request to this committee is that let us get back from the department what they have in mind in terms of community services, what they have in mind in terms of outpatient services, what they have in mind in terms of treatment centers. Once we have agreed and all, because we're still waiting for those definitions and we're still waiting for those clarities, Chair. Once we have all those clarities, then we can say whether do we establish private halfway houses, because some NGOs might have the capacity to render that service instead of having...
we have agreed that the public have been invited to comment on the bill. We have to go through everything that the public had to say first before we then go back and say, in the light of that and in the light of what the public might not even said, applying our minds to the issues, what way forward we put forward, right? Which is what we're doing as we're going along. That's why tonight's session is going to be long, because we're going to finish that process today. I understand so. So today is a very serious day of your life. It's the day when you're going to change South Africa forever. It's the pivotal day, right? Now, tomorrow, can I just finish the point? Tomorrow. Tomorrow, we are going to start with the process of the department coming back to us in response to the assignments that we've given them. All right. That's why we're going to finish very late today, so that tomorrow we don't have today's process still lingering.
That is why asking you to grant us to defer this. So it can't be, all I'm asking is let's defer it and not make any decisions on it. That's all I'm asking. So because the decisions on this section lies on the clarity we are waiting for. We might just spend and crack our heads on something that we might end up. So I'm just asking that we defer 14. That's all I'm asking.
Is it 14 or is it the whole chapter?
No, not the whole chapter. The other chapter 14, is about
14 is about the creation of halfway houses by government.
That's the one I'm asking. That
you're saying it more as a private function and not as a public function.
No. All I'm saying is that before we conclude that government must also establish halfway houses, let us first find clarity on what constitutes community-based services, what constitutes treatment centers, what constitutes, because we don't have that clarity yet. So as soon as we have that clarity, which is tomorrow, then we can then say, do we support or include the establishment of halfway houses? But we can't drive the establishment of private halfway houses. I'm just talking from the public one.
Before we make such drastic decisions, we must first of all be clear of what it is that we're deciding on. So we're going to have to follow this process arduously. What's the English word? Agonizingly. Arduously. I'll have to use Latin now because English is failing me. We're going to arduously go through this whole process, drag ourselves through it, and emerge at the end and ask ourselves, taking a holistic view of this, are we satisfied that this general scheme of things take us anyway? Is there something we need to live out or to reorganize? Right. So let me say that the issue has been raised. Let's, when we get to the end, look at it, having had a full picture of what is before us. All right? So we'll flag it. Not throwing the idea away, but reflecting it. Would that meet you halfway? All right. Now, are there any other comments in relation to clause 14 before we proceed to clause 15? Yes, Mr. Pierre, is yes?
Chairperson, if I may, I just want to try and inform the committee a little bit more about the halfway houses, which seems to be a new concept, but it's really not a new concept. It's part of the existing legislation for many years, and internationally it is a way to assist persons affected by substance abuse to reintegrate into the community. never underestimate the complexity of a person to overcome a drug problem. It is really it is a major exercise, and I think a lot of people.
Do we have such halfway houses?
We do have.
Where are they, dear?
There's one as close as at Woodstock here in Cape Town. There's a halfway house here in Woodstock. It's a private one. We do not have public halfway houses at this stage, only private halfway houses. But it's not a very popular concept, and unfortunately it's not a very popular concept, because I think it's a very...
No, but you haven't answered Honorable Mohamed. She asked, do we have one? And you said we have...
Yes.
You said we have private ones.
Yes.
The question is, do we have halfway houses as contemplated in Clause 14, which are publicly established?
Not at this stage, Jesus.
So we don't have a single one.
Not single
one.
No,
we want to build a system. So he's correct by saying that we're actually creating something that doesn't exist.
Even it's in
the legislation may be providing for it, the current legislation.
Yes.
But it's never been applied.
Never.
Exactly.
What's going to make it be applied in Switzerland?
Well, I cannot really answer that question, but we would like to...
Why were they never established?
I think the common concept was to put people in treatment centers, either state or private institutions, and try and get them back into the community as soon as possible, without any other mechanisms to assist them going back into the community. From the private institution side, it is quite often not financially very viable, because the people coming to private halfway houses could often cannot contribute financially, because the people going there is often people who are unemployed and do not have a family infrastructure. So
can I tell you a story? You see, this parliament has become weary of departments pushing us into passing legislation that just get packed and is never implemented. Because as we go into the future, society is going to become more assertive. People are going to realize that there's stuff in this legislation that's not being implemented. And you know the legal tool that they use to force government to deliver on promises that is made, not only in policy, but in law. You know what tool they use? It's called a mandamus, the Latin word. But what it entails is it's a tool that civilians can use to compel government to implement legislation. All right? So just bear that in mind, that sooner or later you're going to be compelled to do things that you've passed in legislation years and just never implemented. So that nobody thought of doing it. Maybe they're going to start doing it now.
They will do it, because you must remember that the previous legislation were passed by parliaments that did not engage the public.
Yes.
So as parliament engaged the public, as like these public hearings that we have, it raised a lot of awareness.
Huh.
So people are following what the legislation says, including the users. I was sitting in the plane this morning, and the two people, I was sitting in a middle seat, the two people on both sides were discussing about the substance abuse. Little did they even know that I'm part of this legislation that they are busy tearing apart. And I mean, I just kept quiet. I didn't answer because I wanted to listen to what they were saying, because the minute if I was going to be...
You're going to modify them.
Yes, I was going to, and I was listening to them. And the reason why I'm raising this thing is that this one guy was telling this other guy how his brother is struggling and how the family is about to sell everything to get him into a treatment center. And then this other one, the one sitting on the other side, is actually a lawyer from, is it Blackfish or something? One of those NGOs that deal with legal things. And he was saying, no, we're not, don't worry. When Parliament passed that legislation that they are busy with, your brother will get help. So you can see already, you've got law firms. All their business is about litigation and taking. That's how they make their money. So they are watching everything that, as we pass this legislation, they are maneuvering themselves.
Who can I write to ask
government is. That's all they are in the business to do. And they are making lots and lots of money out of this country.
Yeah. Okay, you've made the point. Is there further point you want to make? All right. Okay. Miss Kelana Masiba. Well, until you stop
kidding me. I think here we've got to really decide what is it that you want out of this thing. And I'm not saying this in a, you know, just funny or anything. But I think we really need to be sure about what we want out of this thing. We've got serious problems out there regarding substance abuse. And we need to find mechanisms of dealing with those problems. Now, Chair, we've got 5 treatment facilities. We've got a lot of private facilities where people are paying to receive a service. We've got a revolving door syndrome, where people are coming in and going out. A lot of money is being spent in the country, and I think the figures were given by the CDA in terms of how much substance abuse is causing this country. Now, Chair, if we're not going to create systems, because you can go to any expert, they will tell you then, if you don't create alternatives for
you've made the point
that abuse substances, Chairperson, if I may just finish. If you don't create appropriate alternatives for people that abuse substances, you can treat them until doomsday. You'll be treating, they
I
go back to the state.
You've made the point. Everything else that you're saying is captured in what you've already said.
I just wanted to say here in terms of cost. How do you cost what government has to do? Do you cost that a service that is going to benefit?
Can I ask you a question in that regard? I'm going to throw back that very same question back at you, raw as it is. In your costing of the implementation of this bill, have you determined how many halfway houses you're going to create and at what cost?
In terms of, you said all the treatment centers, government treatment centers that have that are established now and that will be established, which I must ensure that those halfway houses are available. So that people that come from these treatment centers can go to these halfway houses and really be given access, properly being given appropriate skills, so that when they, this lady was actually saying this morning that if you don't get a person who's been always rehabilitated straight from treatment into a job, then you must just know that you've wasted your money.
Yeah, no, I accept all of that. You're not going to say anything else that I will not agree with. Everything you've said, I agree with, and everything else you're going to say along those lines, I'm going to agree with.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So you don't have to. Can save your plan. But the question that I'm still asking you, okay, let's do it this way. How much are we spending currently on the 5 treatment centers annually? Yes.
This halfway house is giving a right. I answer that I like. It's not, we all agree it's not a new concept. We're amending legislation that's been there. And then you rightfully give an explanation that, look, it's a revolving door and everybody else. Why were these things not established when they were there in the old legislation?
That's it.
Why?
So let's package this nicely. The first thing we want to know is how much currently in your budget, total national plus provincial budget, on the existing halfway houses. Obviously, the cost is not in their establishment, it's in their maintenance, I suppose, and including the costs, the management costs of the services that get rendered, the per capita cost. All right? Now, we're not even talking about building things from scratch, then we're talking about supporting the existing program. I want to know how much it is, but do you have the figure currently? How much is on the existing government halfway houses as well as the subsidies that you provide?
Chairperson, I think Pierre indicated that you don't have public halfway houses. be able to respond to you off the cuff. But, Chair, we can give those figures tomorrow, or if you can look at the costing report that you provided to this committee, all those
yeah,
figures.
I just wanted the figure.
No, I don't. I can't give you that figure off the cuff.
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
Because I need to know what the current figure is and how you progressively plan to increase that figure and what in concrete terms those figures mean in terms of how many additional treatment centers, prevention programs, and halfway houses you envisage to roll out using that budget. This is an approved budget, eh, in the MTF period. That we would be talking about, is it not? The costing that you're giving, you'd be giving us, would it be something that's already been factored into the MTF, or at what point would the actual cost be agreed to be part of the budget? Can I just understand it?
There are obligatory provisions in the legislation that have been prioritized. So they have been costed. So the current budget doesn't as yet reflect the cost in relation to...
Because the legislation is not yet.
Because the legislation...
But there's been agreement with Treasury that this is what is going to cost.
Actually, the Minister of Finance said, you know, actually the figures are very small. You know, we are expecting more from the state. And that's the cost.
And this is the figure that you're going to give us tomorrow morning?
Yes.
That the minister says?
Those are the projections in terms of the cost of this bill.
Yeah.
That
includes the building of new halfway houses and more treatment centers, etc.
Yes, kept it in line with this bill.
All right. So you're going to give us a sense of, on average, how many halfway houses and additional treatment centers this is going to translate to.
Let me advise also for the committee, like we did with as a condition before we passed the Social Assistance Act. If you remember, we wanted it in writing. We wanted a letter from Treasury. We wanted the DG to bring, and we want the same for this bill. Before we pass it, there must be a letter from Treasury that Treasury tells us that this is the amount and this is what, so that we
No, the way we do it is that you'd recall last year when we were dealing with the Children's Amendment, we called Treasury, right? And we said, this is the costing that's been put to us, all right? What is your reaction to that costing? Is it something that you have approved that you are running along with? Or what are we dealing with? All right? So, at some point, we're going to call Treasury once we've agreed on the systems and institutions that we establish to establish if that costing that you're referring to, all right, first of all, understand whether that costing has captured this and what we mean concretely in terms of has captured it. How many additional facilities are we actually talking about, right? Then we're going to get Treasury to respond to whether these things are going to be budgeted for. Because once the legislation provides for them, they have to be created. There's the concept of progressive realization. But what progressive realization means can't just be some vague, nebulous concept. It's going to mean a serious look at actual establishment of things.
Despite us having called Treasury, if you remember when we passed the Children's Bill, the Minister of Finance, despite all that exercise, went outright and said the country will never be able to afford that.
Yes, I recall that.
I don't want any of that next to my name anymore. Now, as much as we're going to call Treasury, I still want the committee to get that in writing from the Ministry of Finance, because we played a push and shovel with the Children's Bill. We had to. I don't want that experience in my life anymore. So as Treasury officials, and some of these things, so we don't want to be passing the bill today and tomorrow the Minister of Finance goes and calls a press conference and says this bill is unaffordable. We don't want that. So the same way we did with the social assistance, I'm still insisting on that, Chair. If you remember, the DG of Social Development brought the letter himself in person, and we all got copies of it as a confirmation to say that it's been budgeted for, and I want this the same process, that yes, Treasury will come to tell us, but we still want that letter written so that tomorrow when he calls the press conference and he says, we've set and passed something that the country will never be able to afford in whatever year, then we are able to say, but, oh, wait, we've had this discussion. Because we can't be seen as a group in this portfolio committee that constantly plunges the country into things that are, and we all know in the all sense of the word that welfare services is the worst. They get the lowest budget. So making welfare services an essential frenzy is not taking us forward. So let's all as a collective take that full responsibility.
But we'll get to that point. But for now, I think we need to break for tea, which is running cold, which is available for use. Shall we have a 5-minute stretch? And then we can move beyond that. I think that the way we're going to do this is that we're going to create the system. So. And once we've created and have agreed, this is how they need to be organized. Then we will then invite an address on the question of affordability. All right? And if there's commitment that these things have been budgeted for, they would be able to fund them. It's not up to us as Parliament to say don't have them if they have the money for them. All right. On that note, we're going to break for tea, 5 minutes, and let's resume promptly after that. That there may be a need to collate some of the aspects, make sure that all the apples are put together and separate the apples from the oranges, where we are really dealing with apples and oranges. But where we're dealing with apples and apples, then try and keep the apples together. All right? That, in a sense, summarizes what we propose will be done in relation to this chapter generally. And that may just be a principle that applies in reorganizing the bill elsewhere. All right? If there are norms and standards or conditions to which particular facilities must comply, and if those conditions have to be equivalent, irrespective of whether it's a public or a private facility. There is no rational basis why we should provide differently. It may well be that in the one instance, we may have one condition that says a registered facility must comply with the following conditions, and then list those conditions, and then deal with non-compliance separately between public and private facilities, because in the one instance we might just be talking of deregistration and the consequence of deregistration. And in the other instance, we may be talking about a disestablishment. It may well be that the mechanism of dealing with the corrective mechanism may be slightly different between the public and the private, but that the conditionalities themselves, which talk to the norms and standards in part, we need to make a decision that says, do we want to have a set of norms national to all types of facilities? Or do we need to provide different types of non-food standards for different types of facilities? Say, have halfway houses and a clause that deals with nonsense standards relating to halfway houses and provide for the registration or registration and inspection for compliance with halfway houses in the chapter on halfway houses and then proceed to the next chapter. So the way in which we organize this whole book, it's something that we need to apply our minds to and make a firm decision to say this is how we want to organize it. What are the core elements that should go into each chapter? Registration, establishment, subsidization, deregistration. I don't know if governance issues, where they fit in, how they fit in. Did I mention funding? So we need to say in each chapter what are the core elements in that chapter and have a clause per core element, all right, that regulates that element, all right, and do the same with all the others. Where, because we're dealing with public-private dichotomy, where it is appropriate to deal with them separately, do so. But where it's appropriate to deal with them collectively, do so. So that we don't make artificial distinctions where those distinctions are not warranted. But equally, we don't treat different things the same when we should be applying different systems. Because with public facilities, of course, we're talking establishment. With private facilities, we're not responsible for establishing them. Private initiatives, but we regulate them. All right? We equally want to regulate those that we establish. And that's where the overlap comes. How we regulate them may either be through the same standards, unless there is a case in a given situation for using a different standard. So that in essence the kind of unpacking that we'll need to do as we're reformulating and redrafting. This is in part addressed to the drafters. Pardon me, Chief Director, you were absent, but that is in a sense an instruction directed at you. Maybe I should repeat it now that you're here. We're saying that this bill is almost like a grid. If you think of horizontal and vertical lines, all right? In the one instance, we're talking about facilities and institutions. In the other instance, those are vertical lines. In the other instance, we're talking about services and programs. I don't know if programs include facilities. Now, some of these facilities and programs are run by private entities. Some are run by public entities. Right? But they're still treatment facilities, irrespective of whether they're run by public or private. They still have to comply with certain norms and standards, all of them. They still have to be held accountable, all of them. There still has to be funding, whether it's in the form of direct funding or in the form of subsidization. Direct funding, basically, I mean, as in we establishing them and running them ourselves, as opposed to
universal norms and standards that are going to apply in the way in which facilities and programs are run, are organized, and entail. Why not have universal provisions? Unless there's justification why you need to set different standards for different, for the same type of facilities, but administered either publicly as distinct from those that are administered privately. All right. I don't know if it makes sense what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Then the further issue is, can we really have a list of norms and standards, or rather a list of areas to which norms and standards must relate, be a universal list for the full range of programs, services, and facilities? Or do we have to have separate sets per type of service, facility, or program, so that we package accordingly? Right. Especially because we think you would have to be specific about what exactly you want us to give you competence to develop norms on. Must be specific so that we know what we're giving you power to do. Now, in that shopping list, is that shopping list something that can be drawn up as a universal list for all the services and facilities, or is it something that can best be dealt with in a packaged way? Each type of facility or service has its own specific package that applies to it, even if there may be overlaps here and there. So that is a strategic engineering issue that we need to look at, going back to the grid, the horizontal and the vertical lines. Alright. And we further need to make a strategic decision. Do we want, after each chapter, to provide for the norms and standards they say at the end of it? Or do we rather want to have this whole package put right at the end of the bill itself? Certainly, we don't put norms and standards at the beginning of the bill, for the simple reason that you must first establish what it is you're creating before you can decide what norms and standards you need to set for the effective implementation of that which you have already created. But whether you put a set of norms and standards at the end of each chapter, or you put norms and standards packaged together right at the end. All right. The one challenge is when it comes to corrective measures, when norms and standards are not complied with, because there are a range of possible options. The extreme one being de-establishment or deregistration in the case of a private facility. All right. The big question is, can we have all the conditionalities captured in the norms and standards and nowhere else, and then simply say that a facility must comply with norms and standards that have already listed elsewhere, failing which any of the following remedial steps can be taken against it? The extreme and the ultimate being deregistration or disestablishment. All right. Other interventions could be compliance directives or whatever you call it. It could be whatever other interventions other than the extreme. And you may want to say the following list
every legal ground on which you can lawfully dismiss a person. Only three. And labor lawyers who are hearing me, correct me if I'm misrepresenting the law. The one is misconduct. The other one is operational reasons, which is traditionally known as retrenchment. Of course, subject to you complying with the conditionalities involved. And the last one is incapacity, which has two elements. Because of incompetence, or because of incapacity. Because of ill health. Physical incapacity. So you know already that you have to establish either of the three grounds in order to have a legal dismissal. Now here, if you want to disestablish or you want to deregister, do we know what are the fatal things? Or is it purely a discretionary matter that the department can decide arbitrarily and say, we don't think that this facility deserves to continue to exist without having upfront stated the critical grounds? Something we need to give a thought to. So that's more or less the way I see it. And of course, Chapter 2 is set apart from the rest of the book in the same way as the chapter on the CDA. Chapter 2 would be a mirror of the chapter on the CDA. It would be providing the legal framework for a whole dispensation that we envisage, an integrated response to substance abuse. All right? It will be going beyond what the rest of the bill deals with. That's where the whole synergy and integration beyond social development is stated as a principle. Of course, it will be taken through in certain specific areas. We dealt with issues of health in relation to facilities. We've dealt with issues of education, for example. But where we deal with the matter in a much more broader way would be in Chapter 2. And the chapter on CDA would then be providing the coordination element by creating the CDA itself and stating its roles and responsibilities. That's more or less what we're envisaging. All right? Now, are there any comments on this one? And any comments on clause 14 before we step it off it and deal with clause 15? All right. Now, clause 15 deals with the registration of private facility, private halfway house. Oh, all right. Okay. Right. Can we first deal with the public comments and then the departmental comments?
Yes, Chair. With regard to the public comments, there's only one submission from the CDA. It proposes that in clause 15 sub clause 3, insert new sections by adding contents of section 14 sub clause 3 and renumber the rest of the section. There's no submission from the department, Chair.
Sample.
It's more or less along the lines of what you said a few minutes ago.
All right. Any other comments? Comments on the clause as a whole? Anybody who wants to venture any comments on this clause?
For me, now, what
say the inconsistent.
They're saying you're speaking in the photo again.
No, I was saying the inconsistent. They are inconsistent. That's my first problem. Because remember at the top you are establishing public halfway house. And immediately thereafter you are registering of private halfway house. When you've actually not even sorted out to first determine what's the difference between the two. And when you look at the content of the two, of 14 and 15, let me just make an example. You sort of, at the top, 14, you say, 14 when you say, the minister may, right, from funds appropriated to parliament for the purposes of estate aid, service users who in terms of this act have been discharged from a public or private treatment center or has been granted less. But when you start 14.1, you go, no person may establish or manage, which would be acceptable. But then you go to any person who desires to establish or manage a private halfway house contemplated in subsection 1 must apply in the prescribed. And then what do you say in subsection 1? No person may establish or manage a private halfway house or other place maintained mainly for the accommodation of persons contemplated in section 14.1. And 14.1 here also is the minister may from the fund. Alright? In section 4.1, unless such halfway house or place is registered under this section, or unless it is a halfway house or place maintained by the state. Mara, your heading says registration of private halfway houses. But you're not outlining, firstly, Ulodi registrar in which way? And what is the fundamental difference between the two that necessitates, because the top one you're establishing them, and then the other ones you are registering them. You're assuming that they exist.
Department, you want to respond to?
Noted.
But what does noted mean? Do you agree with her? Do you disagree with her?
I agree.
All right. Legal services, what is your opinion?
To an extent, I do agree with the Honourable Member. I think we can rephrase Clause 15 to basically say what are the requirements for registration of a private halfway house and the process that needs to follow in registering such a halfway house. But I think the intention is that you cannot run or manage a halfway house unless you have first applied for registration to the Director General, and unless the Director General has actually accepted your application. It's only then that you start establishing. It presupposes that this is only applicable to the halfway houses, private halfway houses, which are not in existence at the time of this Act coming into operation. Because you'll see there's a clause that will then indicate later to say if there's anything done under the previous Act, it should be considered to have been done in terms of this Act. But where you are starting afresh, you want to come up with a private halfway house, you first need to apply to the Director General. And only once the Director General has registered your halfway house can you start managing such a halfway house, private halfway house. But I agree that we can try and phrase it in such a manner that it becomes clearer. Thank you, Chair.
Well, obviously, we always have a transitional clause at the end of every bill that seeks to take care of the transition between the one regime to the other, and that preserves that which was done in terms of the previous regime. how that gets preserved and how the transition occurs depends on how we formulate that transitional clause, whether we give a time frame within which registration in terms of the new dispensation would have to be complied with, and whether we've provided a reasonable period to allow people to adjust accordingly is something that may be a subject of debate in that regard. But clauses like, I have difficulty, like the sub-4, the Director General may grant a conditional registration on such conditions as he or she may deem fit for a maximum period of 12 months and must specify those conditions to the applicant in the prescribed manner. Such conditions practice that comes from the past where you had this kind of absolute discretion. The Director General may at any time after 1 month notice of his or her intention to do so and after consideration of any representation received by him or her during such month or cancel a registration certificate issued in terms of subsection 3 or 4. And I suppose that would have to relate to some standard that's already in existence. It cannot just be an absolute discretion. So let's just understand what the framework. The days of unfettered discretion have come and gone. Today, people need to have certainty in the law as to what it is they need to do to be in compliance and what is it that will make them non-compliant upfront. We have had a situation of a facility in Social Ngobe where this poor lady asserts that social workers would come there, or at least it was, move in and say, check around, go around and say, issue a notice to say you must close down because your facility is not compliant. Do very little to assist the poor lady who is semi-literate in enabling her firstly to understand what is it that is said to be in violation of, and two, what is it that she needs to do to be in compliance. And then there's this heavy-handedness that then happens, where people are pushed around, ordered around, without upfront being given very clear. And what's even more, find that even the conditions we're talking about, the legislation itself does not specifically provide for it. It's just things that we thought along the way, and we decided one day, woke up and felt we needed to put up these conditionalities and get everybody complying. So we don't just want to give away unilateral power to make conditions without any form of scrutiny. And as much as you're going to scrutinize these facilities, we also want to scrutinize you in how you use your powers. Mr. Kalamudimu, were you trying to address me? All right. Okay. Can somebody comment on this? Legal services?
Can you also comment on 7 while you are at it? What's the difference between 6 and 7?
Let me venture a response on 6 and 7. Sure. Okay. 6 and 7 are exactly the same. That is one of the clauses that the one I indicated right at the beginning to say there are certain mistakes that are very clear and that should not be there. So there's no difference. They're exactly the same.
State law advisor, how did you allow this bill? we need a bit of cleaning up. But my other question is, the earlier clause listed things, clause 14 listed things, have we listed things here as well? Conditionalities. What's the relationship between the list and clause 14 that applies to facilities under clause 15, 14, and not listing of the same things under clause 15? What is the rationale? Or have I missed something?
Chair, I may not be able to venture a response dealing with the rationale thereof, but I think it was premised on the distinction between the private halfway house and the public halfway house. But I thought we also indicated that we need to look at the bill and see which things would be applicable to both private halfway houses and public halfway houses. And if there are those which should be applicable to both, then it should be made clear. And where some conditions would only be applicable to private halfway houses, then we need to make it clear also to say the following would only be applicable to private halfway houses.
So we're identifying a clear gap in relation to clause 15. Are we identifying a clear gap in relation to clause 15, or is it something? Is there something that somebody is missing that there?
Sure, I think it was what you said about 20 minutes ago to say, let's look at the whole bill and see which things would be applicable,
yeah.
Which conditions.
Now, you've already made that point, and I accept. But I'm saying, just in terms of looking at 15 as it stands now, is it a situation where there should have been a list of the kind that exists in clause 14 that was omitted or not?
I think why the conditions stipulated in private treatment in I think it's probably an omission, or maybe things being turned around. There's something wrong here.
All right. Okay. I just thought maybe we could all be thinking that there's an omission when there isn't. I just wanted to be sure. All right. So clearly there are gaps. When we rework things, we're going to have to work hard at plugging those gaps. All right. What else do people have to say in relation to clause 15?
Okay. I think that we can just let the department go work on 14 and 15 to make it one thing. Because if you look at 15, it was just more power being given to the Director General. Because every sentence, the Director General will do that, the Director General will do that. It still doesn't say, it does not talk to the registration of private halfway houses. But when you look at 16 says compliance with conditions, no? For registration of private treatment centers and private halfway houses. And I mean, I'm still coming back to what I said earlier on, Chair, that if we could give the department time to go clean, because you can't lump treatment centers and halfway houses in one sentence in terms of the conditions of registration, because they are two different things. Unless if I didn't understand the concept. But the department, when it comes to 16, they decide to put private
treatment
centers
in as well.
And private halfway houses in one thing. But what makes it more difficult for me, Chair, is that on 16 they are outlining, ne? They're starting to say that if you don't comply with something they never outlined, they never told you what you are supposed to comply with, but they are already telling you that if you don't comply, if there is a reason, this is now the opening sentence, 16.1, if there is reason to believe that any of the conditions contemplated in section 13.4 or 15.4 have not been complied with, the minister may implement measures to facilitate compliance with those.
There's only reference to the minister on 14, which is the government story. And then there's no reference to the minister on 15. It's only the director general. But you start 16 with that to say that people in private treatment centers must comply with something that they were never told what it is. And right at the beginning, up front, you use 14. And cross refers to 14, but 14 talks to public halfway houses. But now, and these were the things that when I said, don't try to separate the two because then there's confusion. Because now we are binding private treatment centers to something that is not for them. The heading says public, but the very first sentence says they must comply with what is outlined on 14, which is for public, but we're talking about compliance with the registration. So I wanted to propose, Chair, that 14, 15, 16, really we should not even try to we should give the department space to go
and reorganize.
Yes, because, I mean, everything on, if you look at Tuesday, the manager of a private treatment center or private halfway house must report to the minister, I mean, honestly, any circumstances which may result in his or her inability to comply with any conditions contemplated in Section 13.4 or 15.4. And then this is all about the Director General. So the 1 minute... So I'm just saying, let us give the department an opportunity. But we already gave them enough armament, Chair, including yourself, about issues of registration. And once they've outlined issues of registration, then they can talk to compliance. And I think compliance should not differentiate between public and private, because the whole section is wrong.
I think the procedure for registration, deregistration, temporary withdrawal of registration, the process itself will obviously be different between a public and private, right? Because the one instance we're dealing with is something that belongs to somebody else that you're trying to regulate that person, how that relationship between the private entrepreneur or the private institution and the state in relation to compliance. The one instance is the state itself that is enforcing compliance against itself. So clearly, the processes will be different. But the content of the programs, the types of programs, the norms and standards to be adhered to in those programs, services, and the facilities. You see, there what applies to the goose applies to the gander. If the one has to have two toilets, the other should have two toilets. A male and a female toilet, standard, irrespective of whether it's public or private. All right? So it's more the process issues where you have to differentiate. All right? Right.
Just to say, Chair, when you look at 16,
yeah,
please do look at the cross referencing, because, and also, things like number C, hand over the department all assets bought with government funds. I mean, in the middle of a registration of a private treatment center, as it's defined, that might not be appropriate.
What does that mean?
That's the one thing. But the second thing is that we are saying, number four, any person who fails to comply with subsection one is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 12 months, or to both fine and
practice. Which class is it again? Class 1.
4, 16.4. And then when you look at 16.1, which is being cross-referred, all it says, if there is a reason to believe that any of the conditions contemplated in subject 13.14 and 18.4, 15.4, have not been complied with, the minister may implement measures to facilitate compliance with those conditions. But when you get to 4, you're now throwing them in jail and fining them. But you didn't say anything on 4. I mean, on the one you are referring them to. That's all one thing. So those are the things that needs cleaning up. Because the other thing is that even the offences themselves, you indicate in the punishment, the punitive measures, but we don't know what's the crime that warrants a 12 months and a fine. And there's no way, even on the cross referring, it doesn't talk anything about what the crime would be that would warrant that. So you'd want to look at that as well.
Yeah. Yes, Ms. Sato.
Also under 16.5, a person convicted of offence in terms of a section may not manage or operate a private treatment centre or halfway house. Does that mean that they can go and manage a subsequent? Or am I being taken?
Yeah. That is just the additional issue. Because 16.1 says if there is reason to believe that any of the conditions contemplated in section 13.4 or 15.4 have not been complied with, the minister may implement measures to facilitate compliance with those conditions. That's some kind of an intervention power or responsibility that the minister is being given. And then in 4, now I'm getting to it, and I'm saying, and then in 4, you then say, if any person who fails to comply with subsection 1 is guilty of an offence. Now, it could mean the minister by not implementing measures to facilitate compliance with those conditions would be guilty of an offense, because he is any person too. And there's a compliance requirement in relation to sub 1. You need to throw the minister in jail here. 15.4
that is being prosecuted to say, the Director General may grant a conditional registration on such conditions.
15 or 16?
15. 15.4 is the one that the conditions that will warrant the 12 months fine, in jail, imprisonment or something. 15.4 says the Director General may grant.
My 15.4 says a private halfway house registered under a law repeal.
What? 15.4. 15.4, Jack. 15.4 says the Director General.
Has my braille been scrambled or something?
Yeah. It's the one you read out first. The Director General may grant a conditional registration on such conditions as he or she may.
Oh, I was looking at 14. 15.14. All right. Mm. You're talking 15.4.
So,
right.
I mean, okay. Or she may.
My brain is getting scrambled too. I may need a bit of...
And then 13.4 says exactly the same thing. Now, I'm trying to say that if the Director General grants you a conditional registration, no?
Mm-hmm.
And that conditional registration may deem fit to a maximum period of 12 months. If you don't get the registration, that's practically what the bill says, then you can be fined. But you have been granted a registration of 12 months. How do you get thrown in jail or fined for that?
I'm losing it a bit. You're looking at 15.4 in relation to which other clause? Read with
okay.
Other clause.
Let's bring you up to speed.
Read with?
Okay. 13.4 and 15.4 are the clauses that we are being referred to on 16.1.
Or in respect of which you could get...
Are you with me now? If there
yes.
is reason to believe
that
any of the
in
conditions
section 13.4 or 15.4
yes.
have not been complied with,
yes.
the minister may implement measures to facilitate
yes.
compliance with them.
And then these measures that are being discussed, it's about conditional registration.
Director General may grant a conditional registration on such conditions as he or she may deem fit for a maximum period of 12 months and must specify those conditions to the applicant in the prescribed manner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if those conditions are not complied with, then I suppose 16 kicks in,
yes.
Which says if there's reason to believe that any of the conditions contemplated in Section 13.4 or 15.4 have not been complied with, the minister may implement measures to facilitate compliance with those conditions. I think they're talking together, talking to each other.
What do you mean?
Sorry,
because
no.
The person that's going to go to jail is the DG.
No, but this is not about jail. This is about the minister making sure that those conditionalities are complied with.
I don't think we're speaking
the same language. Legal services?
Sure. It may not be, the intention may not be quite clear on the bill itself. But my interpretation is that if the DG granted your conditional registration and you fail to comply with those conditions, the minister may then, in terms of clause 16.1, bring measures to implement, to ensure that you comply with the conditions. And if you fail to comply with the conditions, it's only then that you commit an offense. But I'm saying it is not quite clear. The intention is not made quite clear here. The intention is to create an offense for failing to comply with the measures that the minister would have brought.
Are we that drastic? We want to lock people up for not complying with conditions. Yes, because my understanding is that.
I think the intention was that if a person operates a facility without registration, then this is the remedy that is provided to.
But the remedy is locking them up.
That you have to register because you are in contravention of the law if you don't register. Because you have facilities at the moment that are not registered, that are functioning at this point in time. And they're not, you know, they live there. So I think in all, so far in all the pieces of legislation that I know this forum can pass through, that's an offense that's punishable. Especially, maybe we can create certain conditions, like, for instance,
you see what you've tried to do, and that's what what Sarah Fisher was saying, that in an attempt to be very legalistic and mechanistic, we have outdone ourselves. We have created such an intricate and intractable, what's the English word? Something with an apple, something. Intractable, what does intractable mean? Something like that. What is it? What's the English word? English is your first language. Something like that, some kind of web, spider web that you entangled and entangled and entangled yourself in, and now you've rendered you completely debilitated. Simplicity is the language. That's how we write most these days. We write as simply and ordinarily as possible. So I think that's the problem. If you want to create an offense, tell us. What is it that if we do or don't do constitutes an offense, period? Don't cross-reference from the one clause to the other clause to the other clause to the other clause and say you've created an offense. see, that's why these things have to be regulated by Parliament. You can imagine if the department was just given a blank check to go and create all these offences, lock up a whole lot of people for things.
Yes. I'm just looking and I'm seeking guidance.
Yes.
If you look at the Older Persons Act, the prohibition on operation of unregistered residential facilities and registration of
yes.
purposes.
Yes.
And failure to do so in section 18. Any person who contravenes or fails to comply with the provisions of this section or of a condition imposed thereunder is guilty of an offense. So, it's just about prohibition of on operation of unregistered facilities. And then in section 19 of the same Act, Older Persons Act, says compliance with conditions for registration of residential facilities. And then it just stipulates what, under which conditions, the compliance, what happens if a person fails to comply with conditions. For instance, let me read it. It says if the registration of a residential facility has been cancelled in terms of section 18.5 of with the operator of such a residential facility wishes to close in that facility, then that operator must, prior to the closing down, consult with the minister, furnish minister with full report, and hand over the department or assets bought with government funds. Any person who fails to comply is guilty of an offense. So conditions, they are created. I think that was an intention in this, but it didn't, some way it got muddled up. If you say that, are we criminalizing everything? After having said that, that was not the intention, but looking at the prohibition unregistered churches and also ensuring that...
All we're saying is that there must be specificity as to what the offense is, so that we don't get entangled in this web where we have to interpret what we actually meant and so on. So it's the cleaning up. We're not saying we're taking away the power for you to arrest don't comply. You see, the only power that the state has, it's either close people down, impose a fine, right? And you can only impose a fine once you've created an offense. Because if there is no offense, how else do you hold people accountable? Offenses do not necessarily end people in jail. It could also mean people get fined by a court. Alright, because there's no other way of ensuring compliance, you see, other than by way of creating an offense. So that is the context. Alright. But, so there is a need for us to streamline things there so that there's greater clarity as to what it is that would have occurred that would result in an offense. All right, we'll reorganize things and we'll come up with better formulations. Anything else under clause? Were we dealing with 15 or 16? Or both? All right. Are we satisfied? Public comments and government departments, nothing on 16. So we finished with 15 and 16. Shall we move on to 17? Leaders research unit.
Yes, sir. Under clause 17, the civil society prison reform initiative maintains that to prevent violations, it is of critical importance that places of detention function in a transparent manner. It suggests that officials and people who operate such facilities have a duty to act visibly, predictably, and understandably. Those are the words they're looking for. Okay, it focuses its submissions on two issues, namely the scope of the proposed monetary mechanism and monetary mechanism itself, and the need for independent oversight. regarding the scope of the proposed monetary mechanism, it feels that clause 17, subclause 1, A to C, is restrictive in nature as it narrows the inclusive wording of the first part of the clause, and which is any prescribed requirements and applicable minimum standards and minimum norms and standards to only three issues listed. It argues that the subclause excludes important aspects of treatment centers' operations, such as rights violation. Furthermore, it feels that the intended purpose of clause 17, subclause 1b, is unclear, and it seems to indicate as assessment and monitoring of the people accommodated in a center of halfway houses, but does not spell out with what purpose. Okay. Pertaining to monetary mechanism and the need for independent oversight, it refers to Article 11 of CAT, I can't remember now in full, which says methods and practices as well as arrangements for the custody and treatment of persons subjected to any form of arrest, detention or imprisonment. Since South Africa is a signatory of OPCAT, the submission maintains that South Africa reflects on the aforementioned requirements in the bill. It argues that based on Article 18 and 19 of OPCAT, the mandate of the monetary mechanism proposed in Clause 17 exhibits a number of shortcomings. Firstly, it presents that the wording in Clause 17 does not explicitly establish the monetary mechanism as an independent structure, since it operates under the instruction of the director, general, or minister. It refers to the wording in the Correctional Service Act instruction as it establishes the Judicial Inspectorate as an independent office under the control of the inspecting judge. The submission from South African Human Rights Commission, similar to ARASA, the South African Human Rights Commission locates its submission within the provisions of CAT and OPCAT. It therefore urges the Portfolio Committee on Social Development to consider what measures are provided for in the bill that will protect the user services from torture. It also urges the committee to consider the extent to which treatment centers will be compliant with the provisions of OPCAT should South Africa ratify it. It submits that the bill should make provision of designated independent visitors. These people could be regulated by the minister at a later date to visit unannounced and have access to, at all times to the treatment centers. It notes that the monitoring and assessment provided for in Clause 17 would not be compliant with OPCAT, as the monitoring and assessment team is not independent of government and the clause is not preventative in nature. It proposes that language additional clauses should indicate that the purpose of the visit is preventative in nature. And then there's a submission from the Department of Health on page 6. It proposes that clause 17, subclause 4, be revised. No notice should be required to the treatment center or halfway house by state officials appointed to conduct audit of facilities. That's all, Chair.
Let's first get the department's reaction to the comment, then I'll allow members.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as far as the comments from the Human Rights Commission, Civil Society Prison Reform Initiative is concerned around the prohibition of torture. I think we agreed previously, Chair, that we would include a clause that says you cannot, inhuman, degrading type of treatment will be prohibited in those treatment centers. So I think we agreed right from the beginning that we would make those changes. With regards to, I think the Department of Health had an issue around the issue around notice before you can conduct an inspection. We
we also agree that although initially we were of the view that we would not just want to be just found knocking and say we're here for an inspection, the general view that later prevailed was that people can actually state manage inspections. So we then agreed that we will remove any reference to giving notice before coming to do an inspection. Thank you, sir.
Maybe we could provide for both. And in the case of without notice, be more stricter as opposed to where we give notice. Because obviously that's intrusive. Even the police, if they arrest you without a warrant, they want to search a premise without a warrant, it would have to be under extreme circumstances. Ordinarily, they would need to obtain a warrant. Of course, a warrant doesn't give notice per se. The other side is not given notice. But I'm just thinking aloud. Maybe you may just want to be able to walk in without notice, even if there isn't anything in particular that you're worried or concerned about. Just to check if things are, there is compliance generally. So it's more a question of granting you free access so that you're not charged with trespass because you've walked in. But have we specified that at least you must produce some form of identification that is proof of the authenticity? I mean, otherwise imposters could come in and say, hey, we have just arrived, we're from the department, when in fact they are thieves or criminals who have come to kill somebody. And you just open for people, and the next thing you find that you've actually exposed the inmates to dangerous criminals. The times that we live in make us not to take for granted some of these things, trivial as they may seem. Yeah.
I mean, when you read verse 17, it does make provision for instances where you may not provide notice, and it actually states that verse 17, 14, A and B. Almost around saying if the purpose of the inspection will be defeated, then you may not give notice. I'm not using the exact
word. I thought that's what that was seeking to do. Yeah.
Yeah, that is what it's providing. But there were people who felt like we should not at all give notice. And I can't remember who exactly, but members of this committee were also, some members were of the same view.
If there's reason to believe that A, that is sub 4, the life of A service user in the treatment center or halfway house is threatened or in danger, or B, the treatment center or halfway house is managed in a way that constitutes a danger or threat to the service users accommodated in such center or house. So those are the two conditionalities on which you can arrive unannounced. All right. Otherwise, you have to give notice. So if you're coming to check if the toilets are working and the general cleanliness of the facility, you have to give notice then. Is that the intention? All right. Members, any comments? Yeah.
And maybe because the person is a religious, and the man was in the religion.
me rather wait for you to finish the point you're making. All right, thank you. Yes. Just a lesson of the social worker, the way I see it.
Yes, without us describing who constitutes, so that we have freedom to be able to constitute in a manner without, we don't have enough methods. So that means this consciousness will arise, and because the people that are supposed to do this consciousness are against the things. So maybe we need to learn.
And maybe we could have a general principle that talks about suitably qualified persons, appropriately qualified, so that we don't have somebody who has not the relevant skills to go and do an inspection. An aspect for which they are not competent.
Which source are we talking about?
We're talking of 17. One says that a monitoring and assessment team consisting of a social worker, professional nurse, or any other person authorized thereto by the Director General may and must, if directed by the minister, enter any private or so it is constituted by the Director General, but then instructed by the minister. We must just check this interplay between the role of the minister and the role of the Director General, and how we arrive at the delineation of those roles, and how the roles work with each other. Because we may find ourselves in one instance giving the minister a subordinate role vis-a-vis that of the Director General, or giving the Director General the power to make a decision and then the minister to monitor and ensure compliance with the decision that the Director General has made. That's like putting a cart before the horse. It can't possibly make sense. So let's assess those things, role of Director General. We're going to go through each role of the Director General and each role of the Minister and ask the question, is it an appropriate role for the Director General as opposed to the Minister and vice versa? But anyway, the suggestion is in tab one, open it up, not be specific about a social worker and a nurse. May well be that what you're going to look for does not relate to the professional competence of a nurse or social worker. All right. And of course, we should look at the further complicating thing. But if you're going to be looking at the facility itself and compliance of the facility as opposed to the program and the services rendered, may be stepping into other territories, all right, such as the role of local government in ensuring compliance with the physical structures, the requirements governing physical structures. One, two, health story about whether a facility is allowed to provide healthcare services. They might say it's not a job of a nurse to monitor that in terms of their own system. All right. So they may even ask the question, why are you putting a nurse there as if the nurse is the key person to deal with the health issues? As far as we're concerned, you actually need a doctor. So a psychiatrist for that matter. I understand the whole of Limpopo was listening to the radio program this morning. That says, is it 4.8 million people are there in the whole of the country? Apparently it's a handful. But anyway, those are some of the human resource constraints. So the argument is that let's not even begin to mention professions, because it might differ from one situation to the other. Give yourself absolute latitude as to how you constitute the team. But we give you too much discretion. You want us to tighten it, limit you. We'll only be too happy to do that. But will you comply?
I thought your proposed rephrasing could be better in the sense that we may not be challenged if you are specific here to say these are the people who constitute that team, and later it turns out that the people who came to do the M&E were actually not qualified as in terms of the act. But if you leave it to the discretion of either the minister or the DG, then it will be up to the minister and the DG under the circumstances to decide who should constitute such a team.
For me, the issue, I've got three issues. I mean, and I've said this and I'll say it again. Until we sort out the clarity between the programs, the services, and the actual facility, we're going to get our M&E section also not very clear. Because we need to be clear in terms of what is it that they are assessing. Are they assessing compliance in terms of that the toilets are functioning, and you know the bricks and mortar stories of the actual building? Are they assessing whether the program is being implemented? Are they assessing whether the services and the people providing that service are duly qualified? So you've got those different assessments that you need. And I'm just sitting here and I'm saying, where will a social worker play a role? A social worker will play a role when she evaluates the program or maybe the service. But she doesn't need a social worker to check whether the toilets are functioning, is this thing healthy, does it meet? You need maybe whoever. Just check the cleanliness. So let us first try and clarify ourselves what is it that we want this. And if we want the team at that time of inspection to look,
for example, I'm interrupting you again. For example, if you're looking at the books, whether they're in order, you probably need an accountant.
Yes.
An accountant alone, not even accompanied by a social worker or a nurse. I'm not sure if nurses are trained to deal with the books.
No,
or but yes, I know I interrupted you, but I'll just emphasizing the point you're making. Please proceed.
So what I'm trying to get at is that maybe it's one of those sections. I'm still waiting for the answer on three. To say what would be the reason that will necessitate a service user to be subjected to what is being prescribed. Is it when the service user has been abused? What? Because it's okay on the top one to say that the assessment panel can interview the service user. Obviously, even that interview should happen in the manner that does not, you know. And
are we talking of the same three, Honorable?
Yes. The 17.3 on my one.
Because my 17.3 says the members of the monitoring.
Yes, we're talking about the same thing.
And assessment team must be furnished with a certificate authorizing such members to give effect to the provision for subsection 1, that is, of actually doing the assessment. And that certificate must be signed by the Director General.
No, I'm talking about
which must be produced at the request of any. It's simply saying that you must, you know, when the police enter a premise and produce the police.
No, I'm talking about you.
Say we are says we are the social workers from social work, open the door. That's what this is all about.
No, it's
that's where we're getting confused.
No, 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 it's true. That requires that the team says that a service user could be sent for assessment. I'm just asking myself, if you're coming to assess...
Or is it true that you're looking at? All right.
Yeah, I think it's true, yes. Practitioner, psychologist,
professional... Or you mean the interviewing of...
It's a facility...
Of the service user.
Yeah, but there is one that talks about the service user, the team being... Where is it now? No, the one that talks about the one of the teams being able to request the service user to go.
To?
Which one? For evaluation.
The service user to go.
It's true. It says the monitoring and...
This is about the power to, the right to have access to the service users in the facility in order to interview them, to establish...
Wait, Chair. Let me get my copy together. It says the monitoring and assessment team may interview any service user
accommodated
in such center. Ne?
Yeah.
Or how, and may cause such service user to be medically examined. I don't have the problem with the first part. I have a problem
by
with
a
medical
the medical
examination.
By a medical practitioner.
Yes,
like
I've got a problem
professional
with because that's violation of people's rights. So I'm just trying to get clarity. What was the intention? What would necessary?
Or because you're saying this may or suggest that they can do it without their consent.
Yes. Interviewing them is fine because you come in to assess. But what gives the assessment people the right
to suddenly say we want
to suddenly
also
say
I
must go and
want you to
for a
strip so that we can examine you medically?
Yes, I'm just saying I've got a problem with that because this is exactly what the Human Rights Commission talks about. The torture, the fact that you are in a facility does not make anybody to just do as they please.
After all, it's not a prison.
Even in prison, that's not allowed.
And this facility, you may not even have been committed there as an involuntary patient.
Yep.
You may be a voluntary patient.
And in any way, so I'm just saying,
but
I don't have a problem with the interview part. I just need a clarity on the last part. To say, would it be, was it intended to say if they found me with traces of having been abused during the interview, or maybe I'm showing signs of unhappiness. I don't know. I'm just thinking that.
Why
didn't
they say something like, and may with the consent, or at the request of the user, the service user?
The question is, let's first establish what the purpose is.
Let's say this person is there's allegations of human rights abuse and young children who are admitted at the facility being subjected to some form of torture.
You separate it with children so that you give them access to interviewing the patients. That's a separate thing. But
and
then
deal with
when the need arises, the necessitated whatever.
The issues are separate.
Yeah, by circumstances. Then they can then request the medical with the consent, of course. Of the
yes.
Then
let
it
say. And it doesn't say so, of course. All right, so that is the point you're making.
Yes.
All right. Department? Yes.
If that will clarify the issue, I think it's appropriate. We'll attend to it, separate the clauses, and also with the consent we'll add. Because there are situations where you find that when you do these inspections, people's rights have been violated, they've been abused, they've been beaten by dogs in the case of Lobworth and what have you, and they haven't been given access to treatment. Or you might find that the person is so ill. We've had cases where, for instance, in Lobworth, that the person was so ill with diabetes because his medication was exposed. And it's not supposed to be exposed, it's supposed to be kept in the fridge, and the person was very, very ill. And we had to, you know, get the person to, at the recommendation of the nurse, to actually take the person to the nearest hospital or to the clinic for attention. Chairperson, can
all
I
right.
Do you want to give me an opportunity to proceed?
You want to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, proceed.
Thank you. And, Chair, the issue around around 17.1. I think that what we were trying to do is that, and this has worked very, very well in the past, that we said the core team, at least there must be a social worker, at least there must be a nurse. The other people that you refer to, accountants and municipal people and what have you, we add as a need arises. But from what we have done in practice is actually make sure that there is a social worker at least and a nurse, because looking at the programs, the services that are provided to people, issues around the protection of the rights of people and all those kinds of things, and issues that I'm talking about in terms of medication, administration of medication, how do they deal with medication and what have you. Those are the things that a nurse can deal with, and if there are any contraventions that would require a senior person, you know, to come and do whatever work they need to, let's say, for instance, a doctor, then we would call on that expertise to, you know, to come in, whether it's a doctor, an accountant, or whatever. But these are the, and we've done so successfully over the years with the Department of Health, and the Department of Health also didn't see any problem with this clause. It just worked quite well in the past. But we add to the guidance of the committee. But this is a minimum that we're saying should be there at the most. Because you might also get a situation where you open it up, and then you get an accountant and a municipal person to go and do an inspection, and it doesn't serve the purpose which we intended with this law. Thank you.
The rationale, essentially, look, we're not going to throttle the down your throat. But all we were saying is that our inspection standard, isn't it so that if a specific complaint or specific suspicion arrives in relation to the management of a center relating to a specific matter, in respect of which a nurse or a social worker might not be the most appropriate people to deal with. It's a specific or focused inspection. All right. But in that situation, because by implication you could be limiting yourself. If you say every inspection must involve a nurse and a social worker, that might be interpreted to mean that the inspection you are contemplating is of a particular kind. It is one that involves the competence of a nurse and a social worker, primarily. All right. Because you see, one can read between the lines of what you say, and in interpreting what you're saying, deduct from, you know, from what you're saying, certain things that you may not have said expressly, but which you may have said impliedly. Because there's what you say expressly, but there's that which is not said expressly, but is nevertheless said. Or it's imputed to you by a necessary implication. So what we're saying is that fine, if you feel that there is a minimum standard in respect of all inspections, they must necessarily involve what a social worker and what a nurse must look for as a minimum. And the others are add-ons at all times. Then it means you can only do inspections of that kind. All right? You can't just say we're going to send an accountant, all right, to go in and just inspect the books and come back. That's the only inspection you want to do. It would have to be an inspection that involves the other things. But that's the other issue that Honorable
Manager is asking. Responsible for the social workers, and I know she doesn't have them. Now, how do we then, once again, put them on and make them? We ended up having to establish auxiliary social workers, not by choice, not that we, but because acknowledging the fact that we don't have enough social workers. Now we are also making them MNE specialists. I think we are pushing it a bit too. it means these inspections won't happen. And if they happened in the past, well, they happened in five treatment centers. Now we are looking at all of those that are not registered, all of those that have been run by NGOs, all the private ones, the halfway houses. And then, I mean, we don't even have social workers to deal with children. For
may well be that we want to train specialists.
Now we want to make them M&E. No, no, let's just be realistic for a minute. And
see, I know the department.
Take a decision to say that M&E must be established by, and not in the legislation specify the nurse and the social worker. Because we must just be realistic a bit in terms of what we are saying.
I can't see any court saying that you're pushing it when we have outlined the areas of compliance in respect of which you can set norms and standards, and you went and set the norms and standards, which invariably to be monitored for compliance you need competent people to, and competent people, which are the competent people that should monitor, will it be determined by which norms and standards you have set? I see no difficulty in this, leaving it open to yourself. I don't know why you want to tie yourself down in respect of this one. Because if you do decide, it means you are going to have to comply. You're going to have to make sure that this team has two people. You're going to have to make sure that regular inspections continue and there is no question of human resource shortages. We're currently having a serious problem of foster care placement, for example, lasting for a year or two because social workers are complaining they're overloaded. And we want to further absorb this already scarce resource into administrative issues that we could train special people to actually do. Look, if you insist, we'll put it in. All right? Irresponsible as we may feel we are being. All right? But we would urge you to seriously look at it before you insist that we tie you down in the manner that you're asking us to.
Chairperson, maybe just to say that these assessments that we're talking about are not just administrative. It's not just a matter of going there, and we're talking here about normally your routine inspections that you conduct in this facility. And the provision, the practice currently is that we do the inspections at least once a year. And Chairperson, believe you me when I say you need a person, a trained person, to go into this facility and be able to assess. If you are not a social worker, you might not pick up some of the things that a social worker will pick up. A lot of people have been to no board chairperson, and the inspections have been stage managed. And they've come out of there saying, we think this is a very, very good facility. We like what is going on here. At least there's order, there's people are fully occupied, there's program, there's what have you. But if you really are a social worker and you are able to get to engage at that level, person, there are things that we're able to pick up that people were not ordinarily able to pick up. I'm not disputing the fact that there is a shortage of social workers in the country. But we're talking here about inspections once a year at a provincial level that will be conducted by people at a provincial level who are responsible for that particular area of, you know, particular area or particular community where that facility is located. So I'm sure we won't have more than 20 facilities in a particular area that the social worker services. For instance, if it's in Grahamstown or wherever, you won't have more than 20, and it's 20 days in a year. But all I'm saying is that it's not your the same as the other inspections that are done intermittently. It's routine inspections that happen once a year to facilities that are registered by ensure that they comply with the norms and standards, and to ensure that protection of the interests of the people that are in those facilities are protected.
Look, I'm not going to belabor this any further. If the department is if they want it, let them have it. But you know very well, with no port, I doubt if the story is even over yet. It's been dragged for not only months or weeks, but for years. When no port has said, we'll challenge you in court, let's see each other in court. And I would imagine in all those instances, the social worker has to appear and actually talk to his or her report and his or her findings and spend days and hours of preparing paperwork. Not as if you just walk in there and inspect and write a few notes and that's where the matter ends. That is just the tip of the iceberg. But anyway, if you insist on it, if you feel that the provinces are comfortable with it, if it goes through the NCOP and they don't question it, we can only say amen to it. Right? Because we don't want to come across as undoing the standards that have been set and have been applied by the department. Right? If you want to insist that provinces, when they set up this inspection team, of necessity must include this, hence you're expressly mentioning them, if that's the intention.
Can I just also add something to
that? Right.
I think there's a proposal here. I think it's on page 18 actually. That recommends an independent body to do that monitoring. We've got social workers in private practice that can source to actually go and do some of the stuff. But I mean, that independent team can still be formed. You know, it could be a social worker, somebody who's got who's a nurse or a medical practitioner, and other people who are team members. They might be independent, not necessarily employed within the department. I think it's an option that we could look at. Outsource this function to an independent to independent people as may be chosen perhaps by the minister to do inspections in both public facilities and private facilities. It doesn't have to be social workers employed directly by the department. So there are options that we can look at even with the scarcity of social workers, because those social workers in private practice could do something like this for a fee.
I suppose the concern is that you could have eventual situation where it becomes a tussle between the department and the private facility, and it ends up being a show of force between the two. And the question becomes, to what extent is the department being objective, given the fact that it is the referee, the judge, and the other thing, and the player at the same time. All right? So I think it's something that can actually be explored. All right, let's see what you come up with. All right. Just to bring you up to speed, Honorable Mokhubane Zulu, we have realized that the department insists that all assessments, or what do we call them? Monitoring teams. The minimum should include a social worker and a nurse. They want it, so we'll give it to them. If they don't comply, that is their baby. All right. So if they pull out, is there anybody in the committee that feels that we should refuse the department this demand? Ms. Weber. Wait, let's say Ms. Weber.
We not, if we refuse that clause to be in, would
we not be jeopardizing ourselves by saying, well, you know, there was no clause, there was no
the committee refused.
There was nothing put into it, so, and the place went to the dogs, and there's nothing in the bill to say that there should have been some inspection done during the year. As Mr. Keller says, that it should be only just once a year.
The issue is about the minimum professional, the minimum composition of the professional team that should do the inspection. The department is insisting that in all instances, a nurse and a social worker should be the minimum. And they're saying that if provinces are going to be the ones that implement, unless it's in the legislation, they could have absolute discretion as to how they put together that team, and that this particular two professionals in practice have worked well. Health has not had problems with providing the nurse. Social development has not had problems with providing the social worker. That the social worker especially has a critical role to play in terms of being able to pick up things that an ordinary person might find to be kosher, so to speak. Now, what I'm saying is that I don't want to belabor this thing any further. The department demands it against our advice, our good advice. Let them have it. All right.
I don't want to delay. It's fine. We'll give it to them. But you know what this reminds me of?
Yes.
It reminds me, I'm seeing Miss Keller already like the day I saw Fezili. When I got to the CEO, yes, sir?
Yeah.
Fezili, when he was still in the department, sitting there and demanding, I remember I was chairing the JNC, demanding how the panel, or the assessment panel for disabled people must be constituted. I never forget, she was exactly what Madam Gell. Where are those panels today? Zero.
They're having to review the whole thing.
They have to review, and we told, like we are doing now, we did exactly, I said, Fezile, I was the chair that Fezile, even though it's a minimum requirement, you really don't need it in the law. You can outline it in the minimum norms and standards. If you want us to put it in the legislation, you are going to have to do it. He couldn't do it. Because those people that he listed that he wanted were not interested. And they didn't have the time, they had other things to do. And it never solved the problem. And the minister, how many times have we humiliated the minister in parliament asking him that question? He's been humiliated more than I can even remember, to a point where he could not take the humiliation. And that was very deliberate. So I'm just saying, trust me to tell you that whoever's going to be the Minister of Social Development will get bombarded by questions from me. How many inspections have been done? Where are the social workers? Because I'm not going to let it go. And today, there are no panels.
By the way, do we have enough probation services within 48 hours, for example? Mr. Vivius, are we now fully compliant with providing probation services? Anyway, it's not the issue before us, so I'm catching you off guard. It's okay. But, So you're suggesting that let the department rather take responsibility for it by putting it in the norms and standards?
We can put it in the legislation, Chair. I was just advising them to say that I'm not just talking off my head. Experience has taught me from the same department.
They mustn't come around tomorrow and say.
Sometimes we want things that when we go back to implement them, we are unable to.
Yeah. Can the drafters in the committee section record these things that are going into our report, that we passed this with the reservations that we have about human resource capacity shortages, right, at the insistence of the department, going to have it in the report of Parliament so that it's on the record, right,
a monitoring and assessment team consisting of a social worker, comma, professional nurse, or any other person. For me, it can be any other person.
So it's not and any other
no,
person.
No, you don't need
them
to have a
social worker. Or any other person.
With the current phrase, wedding. It can be, you can just take a nurse alone, or a professional nurse, or any other person.
Any other person who does what?
To go and do the inspection, which is authorized by the Director General. But my current reading, unless we say we want to say end, it does not necessarily mean as a basic requirement, a social worker.
There you have a point. You do have a point. But does your point hold? Express mention of the one implies the implied exclusion of the other.
Would be cancelled out by all the other.
But or any other, you see, that's not even addressing my other concern, is that what are the criteria? You see, or any other person could mean, or an auxiliary worker, or I don't know if there's an auxiliary nurse, but somebody with similar competence. Yeah.
If you read 5, at the last beginning, it says the composition, after the long stories of what and what, and then at the end it says, the composition and duties of the monitoring and assessment team must be prescribed. And I'm like, that's the last sentence in the opening paragraph, this is what it says. And it says all other things, and then at the end, as it closes this clause, then it says, the composition and everything must be prescribed.
May respond in our where we intend to come and respond. We actually indicated that we need to delete clause 6 because it's basically the repetition of 17.1. 17.1 already has indicated who is supposed to be part of the drug monitoring and evaluation team. And our view is that 6 sub clause 6 is a repetition of 7, or it suggests that there's no indication in the bill itself as to how the team should be composed.
All right, and all of this escaped the discerning eye of the state law advisor. All right, okay. Shall we proceed? Is there anything else that's left out on 17? I understand that we are being served. Shall we use this opportunity at this point to have our dinner and then proceed to clause 18? How many minutes do you want? 10, 20, 30, 40? 30 minutes. All right. Lovely. So it is done. The secretary is being overruled by an overwhelming majority.